In the wake of the personnel changes, U.S. policy also began to shift. Most notably, the summer of 2004 saw the beginning of fundamental changes in U.S. military presence and posture. On August 5, 2004, Casey issued a campaign plan, a classified document of about 25 pages, plus a series of appendices detailing aspects of the campaign. Remarkably, this was the first time that the U.S. effort in Iraq had a roadmap for attacking the insurgency. It was no accident that the British military, which had been unhappy with Sanchez and the performance of the U.S. Army, played a major role in shaping Casey's statement, remembered an officer who was involved. Casey's campaign plan essentially called for containing the insurgent violence, building up Iraqi security forces, rebuilding economically, and reaching out to the Sunni community through both coercion and co-optation in an effort to persuade them of the inevitability of success for the U.S.-led side. Casey's office assembled a strategy shop that reported to Major General Stephen Sargent, a veteran A-10 close-attack jet pilot, who worked the military personnel system to pull in 9 of the smartest, best-educated officers in the U.S. military establishments, men who had commanded in the field and had also earned doctoral degrees at Stanford, Harvard, and MIT. Running the office was Colonel William Hicks, a veteran of special operations who was also the son of a CIA operative. These 9 officers with PhDs jokingly called themselves Doctors Without Orders, a play on the name of the French charitable organization Doctors Without Borders. But in fact, they had a very clear mandate to think innovatively about how to improve U.S. strategy in Iraq. After nearly a year of indirection and collapse in the program to train Iraqi security forces, Lieutenant General Petraeus was put in charge of it in mid-2004. Essentially, the U.S. plan was to keep a lid on Iraq until such time as newly created Iraqi forces could take over the fight. When Dave came on, there was a palpable feel of dynamism, increased pressure on us to train, recalled one Army officer, a veteran of 2003 in Iraq. Most notably, Petraeus reoriented the training of the Iraqi army. The initial thought had been to create a mechanized force at least able to deter Iran, Iraq's traditional foe. Petraeus, observing that there was an enemy already present, that is, the insurgency, focused instead on creating a lighter force able to fight it. Even so, training Iraqis was a fragile foundation on which to base U.S. operations, because they were nowhere near ready to take the lead role in putting down the insurgency. When Rand Corporation researchers visited Baghdad in the fall of 2004, they found there was a gap of 60,000 between the number of trained police claimed by the top Iraqi police officer and the number cited by U.S. officials. The key element in General Casey's campaign plan was to eliminate safe havens for insurgents before the first round of parliamentary elections in January 2005. The biggest of those was in Fallujah. The battle to retake that city started just after the U.S. presidential election in November 2004. It was a once-and-for-all attack to send a message to the rest of the cities in the Sunni Triangle. You don't have to like the Americans, but if you tolerate the presence of the insurgents, this will be your fate. Second Fallujah, as some in the U.S. government called it, was a fierce battle, but careful preparation prevented it from becoming a civilian bloodbath. While covered adequately by journalists, it probably received less attention than it should have. If a battle of this intensity had occurred during the spring 2003 invasion, reporters would have treated it like another D-Day. But by the fall of 2004, after 18 months of roadside bombings, kidnappings, suicide attacks, and lengthy battles in Samarra, Baqaba, Fallujah, Najaf, and then again in Najaf and Samarra, journalists were fatigued and probably numbed somewhat to the violence.